Psyronauts, and welcome to this week's episode of Observations. I am your host, Sovereign Sire. I'm looking at a piece of paper that's telling me that information right now. I am brought to you by the bon vivants and ne'er-do-wells at julieland.com. And as always, I'm joined by the wonderful and talented Mr. Richard Avery.
I'm glad the fact you have to read that off a piece of paper.
After a year.
Yeah, I know.
This is like episode 55.
Exactly.
I still don't know who I am.
I know.
So I don't... It's not looking much better. Prospects for the future.
Yep.
You know, it's not going so good. So today, my guest is Sean Baker. Say hi, Sean.
Hey, how are you?
So you are a director and a director and then also a director.
Yes, a director and a director.
So you've directed some pretty cool movies. And the one you most recently did, Tangerine, is like kind of getting like a lot of...
Yeah.
Would you say it's kind of gotten the most success in terms of like
out of
just,
my features? Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you want to talk a little bit about so which where do I want to start? So when did you? How long have you been making movies?
Let's start. I shot my first film in 96 and didn't finish it until 2000.
Okay.
Wow.
Yeah, it's one of those, like, you're in your early 20s and you're just doing a lot of other things that you shouldn't be doing and letting time fly by. But in that four-year period, I found an alternate career, which was, I was one of the creators of a show called Greg the Bunny, which is a comedy television show with puppets.
Okay.
And it was a cult TV show that had, like, several incarnations over the years.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what kept me afloat, and that's sort of what kept me occupied while I was making these independents and helping me make these independents.
Right.
So, yeah.
The movie I watched, Starlet, is about, I mean, it's not about the fact that she's a porn star, but it's about I don't want to say porn star, but like a scene girl.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess an like, up and coming.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess. And then Tangerine features like two trans performers. Is there like, are you drawn to like a specific, that sort of outsider, like that they seem like interesting and timely subjects for film, obviously, like a connected, I was like, that's kind of,
there's been that sort of connection that people have been pointing out, but I hate to be self-analytical, but then looking back at the last four films, they're all four, and I'm talking about Takeout, Prince of Broadway, Starlet, and Tangerine. They're all, you could say they're about marginalized people or people who don't normally be given just like a universally themed story.
Right.
So, and the last two have been to do with sort of aspects of sex work to a certain degree.
Right.
So, and so why I'm drawn to that, I'm still trying to figure that out. I think for many, many reasons, but, in particular, I can tell you why I was drawn to Starlet, if you'd like.
Yeah, please. Absolutely.
Okay.
I was very interested in because the theme of the story itself doesn't revolve around the fact that she is a porn star, and it definitely doesn't sensationalize or it doesn't glamorize it, or it's I thought it did a very good job at kind of making it very much just an aspect of her life.
That's great to hear. That was our intention. Our intention was to make a film in which that her occupation, you know, didn't define her. You know, she was just, this was a relationship piece, a friendship between her and an older woman. And that was really the core of it. And what she did to make money and to get by was something that was almost incidental, you know.
Right.
But anyway, this came about because I was actually working on that show I just mentioned, Greg the Bunny. It was in its last incarnation when it was on MTV for 1 year. Nobody knew it even existed because Snooki outshined us that year.
Right.
It was the year. It was the
That's
second.
A quote
it,
of the day.
Yeah, yeah. It was Jersey Shore season two, I believe, when it was really blowing through the roof. Maybe season three. I don't know. 2010, and we had this little show with puppets. It was a comedy television show. It was when MTV was trying more like scripted material.
Right.
And we, by the night that we premiered, we knew we were going to be canceled because it was just like our numbers were so low. But anyway, but the cool thing about it is that it drew me to California because I was out here making this show and I fell in love with the city. And because the show was, focused towards, 16-year-old, boys, guys, we did a lot of stunt casting, and we were having a lot of adult film stars coming on as cameos, doing cameos. And I got to hang out with a lot of them. And I remember there was one moment where I was talking with one, and she said to me, she said something along the lines of like, oh, I forgot to take my clothes out of the washer and put it in the dryer. She was like thinking about stuff she was doing earlier that day. And it struck me as such like such an everyday statement, such like a mundane sort of like everybody goes through this. This is like something that I would be thinking probably. And so then the next day, I think I told my co-screenwriter, I said, let's make a small cinema verite film that just focuses on the lives of on a day in the life of a girl who works in the industry, but it's not focused on the industry at all. It's like it's going to be hard to even figure out she's working in the industry. It's about her losing her dog one afternoon and then trying to find it. And there are little hints that she might be in the industry. And then that slowly developed into Starlet, which was way more plot driven. But at the same time, that's where it came from. It came from the fact that it was just like, I just wanted to. I was struck by the fact that we, you know, often on the outside, and we look at the lives of people in these, you know, in show business and you know, and in the adult film world as sometimes being a little glamorous. And when I had these conversations, I realized it might be the complete opposite, you know, to a certain degree. And that's what we wanted to explore.
I thought, like, I mean, as it was really interesting to watch as a performer. Because I think I'd seen Boogie Nights, but that was obviously like way before I ever did porn.
Right.
But like I think it was the first time I was watching a movie about a porn performer.
Yeah. Like in modern
that day. That was happening like since I had been in.
Right.
So.
Yeah. What did you think about it?
Well, it was one of those things where it's like I was watching it and I was like. I was struck by how accurate you got a lot of the stuff about like the model house and like the roommate situation and like that kind of stuff. I was very pleasantly surprised. I was like, that's actually pretty accurate. Okay. Or even the, you know, on set, like the scene where it was actually Manuel and Zoe Voss and like, cause I'm friends with Zoe. So like, I remember when she shot that. I was like, I was really impressed by that. And I was like, how did you manage to get that, capture that? Like, how was that made possible?
That's great to hear. It's just, it's like all these other, like every movie. This one had a little less, we had to immerse ourselves just a little less than these other, you know, Prince of Broadway and Tangerine, because that needed a lot more research but this one was basically just, you know, hanging out with the likes of Zoe Voss and Richie Calhoun and Scotty Lyons and it was actually shot at his model house, by the way, and then you know, some of the heads at Vivid and New Sensations, and where we shot at New Sensations, and it was just basically like saying, look, this is what we're about to do. Is this accurate? We want to be as accurate as possible. We're not from that world. We want feedback, and it was a constant state of asking for feedback. And then
people very forthcoming?
Oh yeah.
I just have to speak in on the outside. I haven't seen the movie, but I'm probably gonna go now watch it tonight, because it's the thing I complain about every time anybody does anything about adult is that they miss what it really is, and it's just a job. These girls are just girls, and the fact that all my friends are porn stars, but they're just girls, and the fact that you made the effort to get it right there to me is like a high five, because so many people go into this with this preconceived, this is what adults like and these are what these girls are like, and they just make everybody look bad or looks cheesy. And I'm always mad because I'm like going, you don't know the girls like I do. They're just average everyday girls.
Yeah, well, that's definitely something that we wanted to we wanted to get it right, because we wanted this film to, first and foremost, I felt like I was answering to the adult film stars. I wanted them to enjoy it. I wanted them to be actually maybe even entertained by it. So it was just, it was always about asking. That's the thing. It's always collaboration to a certain degree. Yeah. I mean, with the new film, it couldn't have happened unless I had met these two beautiful trans women, Maya Taylor and Katana Kiki Rodriguez, who were very much consultants to a certain degree as
so
well.
So how did the process for Tangerine come about, and how did you do the research for that?
Yeah. See, that's different because that's literally starting from scratch. I mean, like with Starlet, I had the in already because of our connections with, right. You know. But this one, we had to start just literally just pounding the pavement and going to Santa Monica and Highland and approaching people on the street. And so,
really amazing that you did that.
Thank you. But it's something that's, you know, I feel as if it's definitely a responsible way of doing it. You know, you just don't want, I had no idea what the plot of this film was going to be. I had no idea.
Just kind of felt like you wanted to do something about trans girls?
Well, it
girls,
was having
or...
to do with Santa Monica and Highland, quite honestly. It was about that location, first and foremost.
Okay.
And then we knew, because it was frequented by trans sex workers, that they were probably going to be the lead characters. But we weren't even sure yet. We had to explore. It's the same thing that happened with this film called Prince of Broadway. I wish I brought a copy for you, but you can get that on.
You sent it to me. I have it.
Okay,
I was able to watch Starlet. That's next in the queue.
Got it. Same thing, where it was about West African hustlers working when I was living in Manhattan. It was shot in Manhattan. And it takes place on Broadway between 26th and 30th, where all the West African hustlers sold counterfeit goods. And that took about a year of just immersing ourselves three times a week, perhaps, going and talking with people and trying to find our collaborators. So that's what happened here. We were already used to this process. So in this time, we went up to women on the street. We weren't getting very far at first, so we decided to expand our search. Mm-hmm. We went over to that LGBT center on McCadden, which is about a block away. Mm-hmm. And there's a nice little courtyard there. It happened to be a nice spring morning. And there were a bunch of people sitting out in the courtyard. I saw Maya Taylor from like 30 feet away, and she plays Alexandra in the film. And I thought immediately, we have to talk with her. She has a physicality that's perfect, but not only that, she's like sort of commanding the conversation that she's a part of.
Right.
And I saw that she had a strong persona. We go over there, introduce ourselves, and next thing you know, she's like, "Well, I'm an aspiring entertainer." Yeah, sure. And we exchanged information. We're hanging out at the local Jack in the Box on Fountain from that point on. And that's where they like to hang.
I was gonna say that's the Jack in the Box.
yeah. And from there, it was like Maya would be introducing us to members of the community, and it was one day that she actually introduced us to Kiki. I call her Kiki. She goes as Katana Kiki Rodriguez in our film. But Kiki came in, sat across from us next to Maya, and I thought, okay, there you go. Yeah. Dynamic duo. They're great together. They're funny together. And now we're going to have to write a script with two characters for these two lead, for these two to play. And that's really it.
Wow.
So it was like a comment. Like, it's not the traditional research, script, casting, development, it's all of those stages combined.
It sounds very organic.
Yeah.
Really.
Well, it sounds like, so you have like a driving sort of philosophy behind the movies you're making then, because you were saying things like the ethical way to do it is to like do research or kind of are feeling like you wanted to answer to the adult performers.
I do. I mean, it's not a manifesto on my wall, but it's something that's definitely like something we are very conscious of. I mean, I live in West Hollywood. I have a lot of friends who are very tied to the trans community, and I saw their reaction to Jared Leto doing his role in Dallas Buyers Club. I saw how it wasn't embraced, and it was a combination of being conscious of that and also just conscious of the fact that why not, if there are trans people out there who are aspiring actors and actresses and want to do this, why not go that way and cast with real trans people for trans roles? It just makes sense to me.
Right.
And also, you know, the unemployment rate is really high amongst, you know, the trans community, especially trans women of color who come from poverty. So it's like, why not, if the opportunity is there, just from an ethical point of view, why not give them at least give them the opportunity for these jobs?
Yeah. So has that been like, since, what inspired you initially to start making movies?
Was it? Oh, that goes way back.
You know, yeah, let's do it.
Yeah, that goes way back. My mother brought me to the local library in Millburn, New Jersey, and I, way back when I was like 6 years old, and I remember they were playing the Universal monster films, clips from the Universal monster films. So
like
you
Creature
had,
from the Black Lagoon.
Yeah, exactly.
Frankenstein.
It was Frankenstein. That was the one that stuck with me. It was like the burning mill scene at the end of the film. And that night I would remember telling my mom, I want to make movies. So from that point on, it was like that sort of very cliche. Throughout junior high and high school, I made my films, my home videos, and
we used to. When I was little, we used to make Army Man movies.
Yeah,
using Army Man and my cousin and I with a 8mm, you know, frame by frame,
right,
and move them, and then we'd process the film. And then they'd be. Yeah. On the trucks, and we do the whole thing.
Yeah.
We all thought we were Ray Harryhausen.
Yep.
You know, it was like, whatever we could do.
Plenty of rip-off movies. We had Space Wars instead of Star Wars. We had Close Encounters of the, like, Sixth Kind, or I don't know. All that stuff.
I could just see, like,
so
Space
Wars. Do you remember, like,
they're
what,
actually,
like,
wait, can I just say, this is funny, because I haven't thought about this for a long time, but they're actually really, like, in a way, sociological studies, because you can look at what American kids were thinking in the 80s. We had a Red Dawn remake, which it was just, I mean, it was for, I was in what, sixth grade maybe at the time, and you can just see that we were fearing nuclear war, we were fearing the Russians. Yeah. I mean, the Cold War was definitely hitting.
First of all, the original Red Dawn is a great movie.
Really?
I think so. Anything with Patrick Swayze's got to be good.
Yeah.
And then the remake was pissed me off. Oh, I hated the remake.
I didn't see it.
No. Terrible.
Do you remember, like, when you first started making movies, do you remember, like, what the, like, when you felt like you were making your first real movie?
No, that didn't happen until I was actually making my first feature. Even the films that, the short films that I was making at NYU. Just never felt like they were the real thing until I was actually making my first film, which is called Four Letter Words. And it was like sort of a, it was shot on 35mm. Okay. And it was like the first time I felt, okay, good. I'm now working in the
industry. So what was it about?
It's sort of like, it's almost like a social realist, Kevin Smith film. It's about guys in the suburbs, and it's, if anything, it's like a look at, almost like a sociological look at guys in the suburbs. I mean, it's, I haven't looked at it in years, and it has to be remastered entirely. I mean, there are DVDs floating out there, because it did go to South by Southwest, and it got like a minor distribution, but, I've almost been like telling people just don't watch it, but because I'm not sure. I know it's a very young movie. It was like written when I was like 21, 22. Yeah. It's very young in its sensibility. But then also, but the cool thing about it is that just recently Eric Cohn at IndieWire, which, you know, he's the top critic over there, reviewed it. Dug it up and reviewed it and gave it an A-. So I'm like, cool.
Wow.
All right, good, good. Maybe it is decent.
That's pretty good. Especially if you, like, I did it so long ago. It was like your first thing.
Right.
Wow.
So someday I'm going to do a Kickstarter campaign or an Indiegogo or something to help me remaster, because that gets a lot of money. I mean, like, it's 35mm, as you know, and it's like, you know, you have to scan all that. And
you didn't Telecine it back then?
No, it was Telecine, but, like, awful standard definition.
Ooh, yeah.
You know what I mean? It all has to be redone.
From the ground up. Yeah. And that's not cheap.
Yeah. So what drew you to making independent, sort of emotional, thoughtful movies instead of action movies movies or...
Exactly.
You know,
when I was going to NYU, my intention was, I'm going to make the next Die Hard. It was a total genre. Like, throughout high school, even though I was a cinephile and I saw everything, I was still focused on genre. Loved action, loved horror. But it was sophomore year at NYU that I strolled over to the Clock Tower Library on 6th and Waverly and, like, in 8th Street, that one.
Yeah.
And I went in there and I found a VHS tape, and there was this, like, beautiful girl's knee or leg on the front, on the cover, and it turned out to be Eric Rohmer's Claire's Knee, and that was like my introduction to French New Wave. I was a little old, I was 19, but like I'd already seen some of the new wave, but this was the time that I actually focused on it. And then all of a sudden I was like, I think I like this stuff. And it kind of opened my world to foreign cinema and British social realism, Italian neorealism. Wow. Then it led back to Cassavetes. And by the time I graduated, I was like, I want to make these sort of movies. I'm not really as focused on the Hollywood blockbuster anymore.
I know. I could just see all of a sudden now Bruce Willis calls. You want to make it? No. It's like, sorry, no, not interested in making it.
Well, I mean, it's really interesting because it's like, it's like you are a cineast. Like you are like, you're coming from it like almost like an academic place in the sense of like, you've sort of are familiar with the pantheon, like with the canon, and like
try to be.
Because some people, like some creators that I meet, are very much like, just very like, I make what I like, and I, right. you know, and like it's interesting to see like artists coming from different places where it's like, I got an MFA, so I come from a place where it's like I'm very familiar with like where my voice sits within kind of this overall dialogue or conversation that's been going on for hundreds of years. Yeah. It's like, but I kind of, I'm aware that that conversation is there and it inspires me to want to create certain types of poems or to tell certain types of stories. Cause it's like, I'm kind of sensing like a place as opposed to like some of my friends that write that like have no kind of scholarship background at all that do it very much from like a kind of very like, like sort of native place.
Okay.
But and it's kind of like what I always say to everybody. And I think, cause I've had lots of assistants and interns come from schools, Art Center, Brooks, wherever. And I always tell them the same thing. Like it helps to learn all that history and all that stuff. Cause it just gives you more information in your head to pull from and to do so. But I always feel like and I always say to everybody, like you have to kind of learn the rules, learn how everything's done before you start breaking them and start doing your own thing.
Yeah.
And it takes time. And I'm sure you're looking at your career and the films you're making, how you could probably look back and see how it's all changing. And then just not only technology, but how you're doing things. And
because you're getting the whole business is changing every freaking day.
It's kind of timely that the kind of films you're making, like with Tangerine, because it was like made with iPhones. And that was like a big thing that was, and all the PR and press I was reading about it, like that was on the forefront of a lot of people's minds, was that this was a movie that was done like entirely on iPhones. Yeah. And like, isn't this like a sign of the times that like it really is at that place
Did that bother you at all?
Oh,
do you think they were looking past?
Oh, no. Oh, that's what you mean. It was bothering me just to freaking movie. I had to convince myself that it was the right move. It was very difficult for me to embrace the iPhone because it felt like a major step back for me.
Okay.
Why did you decide to do it?
Well, because we had no budget. We had less than half the budget of Starlet, and which is only $235,000. So we had less than half of that. And I mean, it's like with this industry as an artist, you two know, it's like you always want to somehow, you want to have more means the next time you're out. Yeah. You want to have more choices. You want to work up and then not work down. And in this case, I felt, oh my God, I'm stuck with this little bit of money. I'm making another micro budget film.
Yeah.
Right.
No one's going to make much money. I can't, you know, so we got to figure this out. And it was, I'm out of favors. I'm totally out of favors. So I couldn't have shot on film. I couldn't have shot on the higher end cameras. I could have maybe shot on the DSLR, but even that would have added like three crew members. And I want to pay people.
Yeah, exactly.
So we wouldn't have been able to afford them. And suddenly I was like, I don't know what drew me, but there was this Vimeo channel that was focused on iPhone short films and experiments. And I was really impressed. And I found this Kickstarter campaign for this company called Moondog Labs. And it has this little adapter that fits over the lens and it allows you to shoot in true scope widescreen cinema. And that was like, for me, that was like what would elevate it to a cinematic level. Yeah. Right. And I thought, okay, this is possible. My executive producers are Mark and Jay Duplass. And they're just like extremely supportive about anything. So when I mentioned it to them, I was a little weary. I didn't know how they were going to react. And instead, they were just like giving me a pat on the back saying, yeah, do it. It's punk rock. And I was like, okay.
I know. DIY, baby.
Yeah. So I hope I answered that question.
I could just say like, right. Did you ever get like a text message in the middle of a take?
Damn. Oh, that's funny.
I'm just saying like that kind of like, you know, I think it's a genius idea.
I actually probably did during our tests.
Okay.
But then when we were actually shooting,
stuff I shoot at Julie Land,
yeah.
I do all this crazy videos with my girls. And a lot of people are like, what are you using? I'm using my GoPro. They're like, no way.
Yeah.
I'm like, yeah, totally. Like GoPro. Like
can you talk a little bit about like how the movie was able to, like, why do you think it, if you have any ideas about why it kind of caught on, or like, well, kind of,
yeah,
sure, it's become like the most successful so far despite having the budget limitations and all those other things, you know, like,
right. Well, first off, I hope I am getting better. So I actually do think this is a better film than my previous films. Right. But it's not only that. We had two really nice things happen. The trans movements and trans communities have just come into the zeitgeist this year. And 2014 is the year of the trans. So it's and we had no idea this was going to happen when we set out to make this. We set out to make this film over 2 years ago. We shot it a year and a half ago. And since we shot it, we had Laverne Cox getting on the cover of Time. We had Obama using the word transgender in his speech. And we had Caitlyn Jenner transitioning. Those three things just changed everything in terms of the public perception.
Yeah.
So we went to Sundance with this already happening. So it was very much a part of the zeitgeist. And I think that happened. That was really helpful. And then on top of that, this iPhone thing. So the two things together really just, if... You know, for the tech world, it was all about the iPhone.
Right.
And for everybody else, it was about, you know, the fact that we have two transgender characters played by transgender people. So.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome. I love it.
But I have to say one thing, going back to the iPhone thing, it's something that slowly, while we were shooting, all the benefits sort of revealed themselves to us.
The
one coolest thing about this from a director's point of view is that it's almost like shooting with a hidden camera, because it doesn't matter whether they're seasoned actors or first time actors or people you grab off the street. They see this device as a communication device, as a phone first and foremost, not as a camera. So there's no intimidation factor.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So you could basically, well, first time actors didn't have to get over any sort of hump. They were basically comfortable from day one. Mm-hmm. And then also you could approach people on the street and say, hey, be part of the scene. And they would think you're like, oh, you're shooting this. It's video, or like
you showed up with a big IMAX camera, to be like,
I collaborate a lot with Dana Vespoli, and she does like these really dark features. And we do a lot of guerrilla filmmaking.
Okay.
And we have been big proponents of using most of the features that she's done. Two big features around me, we're about to start work on the third, and they have all heavily relied on iPhone.
Oh, nice.
Because we found that we can go anywhere and she can pull out a camera and no one's going to say you can't shoot in here.
Yeah.
What are you shooting?
Exactly.
So we've done things where it's like, you know, having, whether it's being out in public, you know, if I'm like, I know this location, we'll go, we're going to shoot this like tunnel in Northridge, you know, and it's like, or it's like, let's like walk over to Borders and just sit down, and like, so you're going to pick her up here in this cafe and this is how we're going to, and even if they see, like, they'll get out of the way for you.
Right.
Like if they see you shooting, they're like, oh, that's cute. They're making a video. Yeah. So like they'll get out of the way instead of going, get out of our store. Yeah.
And I think that it's this time, we don't have many years left of that, because the public is going to become very savvy, and local government and film commissions are going to become savvy. But right now, you can get away with that stuff, and we didn't even have to permit in the same way.
I was just going to say,
yeah, we had new media permitting or something, or even like still photo permitting or something, where we were able to get,
because you're not showing up with a bunch of trucks and a bunch of things like. So, you know, like,
and by the way, did Dana ever get to see Starlet? Do you know?
I'm giving it to her. Okay. She's gonna watch.
I sent it to her years ago.
Yeah, she was actually excited that you were gonna be on.
Well, tell her I'm a big fan.
I will.
All right.
That's really funny. Yeah.
So did you have to you did this all like you paid your crew, you did all your whole, you got permits. I'm glad to hear that, because like a lot of people just do what I call kamikaze filmmaking, but they really go low. I mean,
where you're asking people to work for free.
Yeah.
No, it was very important for me for everybody to get paid, and for people. And we had a SAG ultra indie low budget rate for our actors, and then of course our two leads, they got points on the film, and and it was important for my producers to get paid properly too. Yeah. Even though it was just like probably going to pay a few months' rent, it at least, you know, it's, they're putting. Producers are sort of these, they never get enough credit. Producers get enough credit. They're breaking their backs.
I directed one movie for Penthouse 6 years ago. I did, with Justine Jolie starring, and they gave me a $40,000 budget, which I don't think they do anymore.
No. Dear heavens, no.
So I had a $40,000 budget, and I tossed in a $10,000 of my own. So I got it to 50, and we shot for 3 nights in a row. Mm. And I take pride in the fact that I took care of my crew, everybody. I had Winnebagos for the girls.
Oh, okay.
Like, I spoiled the shit. I had food. We shot one night. We shot at the parking lot across the street from the Disney Center, and I got permitted for it. Had girls fucking in the parking lot. We got permitted. Cops let us do it. Like, we did, and everybody in the whole crew, the set, every girl was just like, wow. I spoiled the shit out of them for 3 nights in a row. And just nailed every bit of it.
Yes,
I was very proud of that fact.
Godspeed to you for that.
I know. And I knew, though, I was like, this is never going to happen. I was like, never going to happen again. Never going to happen again.
Yeah, those days.
But I'm proud of that. To this day, that DVD or video, I don't even call it a movie, holds up.
Can I ask you, for like aspiring people that are listening, like, what is that process like for fundraising for things like this? Like, for people that are out there going, like, I want to do this thing. Or like, what is that process like?
Well, I had to pay for my first three films. Mm-hmm. And then finally, because of the success of Prince of Broadway, at least in the independent film world.
Right.
Like, I don't know how many people know about it outside, but like, it did very well on the festival circuit. And it got the attention of Mark and Jay Duplass and others. Ted Hope, who's, do you know Ted Hope? He's an independent film producer guru. He's very supportive. He's now at Amazon, but he's very supportive of young filmmakers. And he told me, you know, if he can ever help me find financing. And I said, I have a film that I want to make called Starlet. And he helped me find the financiers for that film.
Awesome.
Right. And so that was the first time I didn't have to pay for one of my own movies.
Awesome.
And then Mark and Jay, they paid for this film
with
a company called
Can you
Proof
explain
Films.
Sort of like I'm just interested in like the festival circuit, like the indie film world, like what is that film world like? Is it sort of
people
clicky? Like, I mean, is it sort of like
I think it's a little crazy. My friends, honestly, my friends that are in it, and I have my producers in it big time out of New York, and he's just finished his first little feature film. He's now in the editing process. And I always yell at him about, like, you guys take this shit a little too seriously. And I also think that everybody gets a little too serious. And I always say to everybody, like, they need to all relax about filmmaking. It's just like him and I had a conversation about this last season of Project Greenlight.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if you watched it.
I haven't seen it yet.
No, I just got upset. It was like these. Everybody gets a little too full of themselves and a little too serious. And I'm always like, everybody needs just to lighten up and realize that each movie, you're going to grow, and you just build and have fun.
Right.
And everybody gets a little too caught up. And I find in the indie film world, all these guys are just so damn serious. And I just want to slap them upside the head. You're supposed to be doing this because it's fun.
Well, that's the thing, though. You're also trying to make a career out
of it. I agree.
So that's where it has to be taken serious. I was I was very lucky I had this side career, because if I didn't, I would be a barista.
What was that side career exactly? I mean, you're
one of the creators writer and director, co-writer, co-director. So even though we weren't like getting rich, it was paying rent.
Yeah.
Right.
And we went from IFC to Fox to IFC to MTV. Fox was our biggest year, and that's when we gained all of our fans because Seth Green was on it, Sarah Silverman, etc. But anyway, so that sort of like just kept us afloat. But hey, look, I have had to, you know, I've done what I consider I've resorted to some pretty low places within the industry, you know, as low
Who
as you
has
can get.
It?
It's called wedding videos.
Dude.
When I was like almost 30 years old and making wedding videos and just How being do like, you, what so am I doing with my
I think
life?
That's really. Yeah.
But this is, let me say one thing. This is what I've said to everybody for the last, I've been here working this town forever, and I always tell people there's two things you have to understand in this town. The balance of art and commerce. You got to pay the bills.
Yeah.
So go do your jobs that pay the bills, and then your art thing is where, you don't answer to anybody. Do what you feel. Mm. Follow your heart. Create. Yeah. And it's like the problem a lot of times is the people that are out following their heart try to bring that to the business world of bills, and that drives the clients crazy because the clients go like, this is what we want. And
yeah.
I always tell them, no, do what your client wants, keep working, pay the bills, then go get off, make whatever porn you want to make, do whatever crazy shit you want to do. Yeah,
I have a question. So then, to those people out there that are like in their 30s that are making wedding videos, yeah. like this, and this is serious.
What
like,
kind of camera
like,
do you use?
Like, I think most of us could go through that period where it's like you feel like, what am I doing? Yeah. Like I feel like I'm above this somehow. Like I right. should be further along, but I am not further along. Like, what advice do you have for that person that's in that moment?
Well, I mean, don't lose track of your ultimate, you know, goal, and don't lose. I mean, you can get, I've known people who have said, I'm making a lot of money in these wedding videos. This is going to become my career, you know? And then 15 years later they said, I'm the king of wedding videos, but, I never made my film that I wanted to make, you know? And I actually, my film called Takeout was made with, Xi Ching Zhou and I, we co-directed it, and we made it for $3,000 using that equipment from like the wedding video days. So mm-hmm. it was like standard definition video shot on the PD-150. It went to it, you know, it got out there. It did the festival circuit. It was nominated for John Cassavetes, you know, Spirit Award at the Indies, the Independent Spirit Awards. And eventually it got distribution through Kino Lorber. And it was just something that we just did because we had to do it. We just right. said, you know what? Yeah, awesome. We have it. We have this. We have to still pay rent. We still have to do our menial work to pay rent. But we're going to, when we have time, we're going to make this film. And yeah. we did, you know.
That's awesome.
We did it. $3,000 with a ton of favors in post-production. So
yeah. I've done those.
That's amazing.
Yeah. I have so many friends. I'll tell you later, but a friend who they made their whole movie in their apartment, and I think it was $5,000 was the budget. Right. The whole movie, and it's a musical.
Yeah.
And it's amazing.
Wow. What is it called?
Devil Inside.
Devil Inside. Okay, I'll check it out.
Amazing.
Wow. But these days it's so different though, and because as you said earlier, technology is changing yeah. so fast. The way that you can be recognized is actually I think a lot easier. Mm-hmm. Because when we did Greg the Bunny, we only had public access.
Right.
And agencies were watching public access back then.
Right.
Because William Morris came a calling yeah. and they saw our stupid little public access show.
Right.
But now you have YouTube, you have Vine. Right. Vine is a biggie. Vine is like really, for me, it's like there's so much, it shows if you can be talented in 6 seconds,
right.
you have talent.
That's the one thing I can't do. I need more than 6 seconds. I just can't even attempt 6 seconds.
We actually cast from Vine.
Wow.
We actually, I know you two haven't seen Tangerine yet, right? But,
right.
The woman who runs the makeshift brothel in the film, I found her on Vine, loved her persona,
mm-hmm.
and
wow.
I found out she had just moved to San Diego. I said, come on up and be in the scene. Since then, she's gotten into the new Paul Schrader film, you know,
wow.
Paul Schrader, who wrote Raging Bull and Taxi
right, yeah,
Driver.
Yeah.
And
And it's so funny. I am totally, yeah. I love it. I just am thinking about all the different filmmakers I know through the years and how technology, how it has all changed. Because back in the day, if you were shooting film, it was just written, you couldn't do anything cheap. It was impossible
right.
with film.
Right,
and
right.
now,
right.
not just, I don't mean the iPhone thing, but more like just cameras now are so much cheaper in the
yeah.
quality.
Yeah.
My DP just got, he told me yesterday, he just got a brand new 4K camera.
Yeah.
He's like, yeah, we're going to shoot the documentary in 4K. I'm like, oh my God, like
right.
really? And like, oh my, you know, it's like the quality, the ease of use.
You can shoot 4K on the iPhone.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
I just got one. I haven't even tried it yet. What I love though, I keep saying to all my assistants and interns, what I always tell them is, yeah, I don't care. The technology is technology, whatever. But if you still can't tell a story and you still don't have a good story, it means nothing at the end of the day. Technical is great. I get it. But I go like, you got to be able to tell that story and got to connect and you got to have all those things. And a lot of people, I think in this day and age, the tech guys get all caught up in it.
Yeah.
And the artsy guys kind of forget about the tech kind of a thing.
That's true.
You have to have that balance. You got to be able to say like, it looks good and it's technically good, but it's also telling a really good story. Mm. Got to have that balance.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's what made Starlet, was that ultimately that kind of, you know, you were very, you're very concerned about what's going to happen to Jane. Like, is she going to be okay? Like,
oh,
is
cool.
she going to kind of,
yeah.
like, there was, like, that was there, definitely, that feeling of, like, I hope, like, I care about what happens to this character.
Oh,
and
good.
I, you know, it's, like, same thing with the older woman, you know, it's that feeling of, like, that ultimately it felt very much, like, for me, I like the way it was shot and like how some of it was like overlit and fluorescent. It's like it had almost a clinical feel that made it very like the stuff in the poker hall, like the in the bingo in the bingo parlor or whatever. Yeah. Like those scenes.
Do you know
like
that that's located on the same block as we shot at the studio that we shot in Chatsworth. Oh damn, I forgot the studio name. Would you know the one that we shot the scene in, the porn scene in? Did you recognize that?
I did. I
yeah,
was like,
that shot on that's on the same block as that bingo hall. It's hilarious. Yeah.
I think but I know that.
I mean,
studio.
But there's something about like for me, what made it relatable was it's like in those scenes where you just see everyone looks like there's no glamour to it, but in that way, it's like you're like that's someone I know. Like that's how people look. That's people doing like real normal shit.
Right.
Like so it's in a way it's like the low budgetness of it or any of those things, it's like it's what ultimately like actually makes the story more affecting because it's kind of you're right there, you're in it, you know what I mean? Like it's like everyone looks like someone you would see walking down the street. There's not this kind of super numinous there's a thing that happens, you know, when especially also too with like bigger budget movies when you're dealing with like celebrities is they're unable ultimately to fully disappear into a character.
I know,
because
it's a big thing.
Because you know them, and also
it's like no matter what, it's Tom Cruise. No matter what's going on, it's Tom Cruise.
There are very few actors who can you know, transcend that.
And so for me, that's like what I like about indie movies and about low budget movies is it's like when the story's good, it's really great because you are able to in a way kind of divorce yourself from all of the things that happen when you walk into a theater and you see everyone's like with their like perfect makeup and the perfect lighting and all this stuff and you're just like it doesn't match any real world conditions that you've ever encountered.
Yeah.
You know,
it was a little difficult with Dre because Dre Hemingway is so gorgeous. You can shoot her from any angle. And at sometimes I was like, wait, can you just I asked you guys to take care. I don't want any makeup on her. Yeah. Tell Dre to take the makeup off. And they were like, she doesn't have any makeup on. Okay.
Can you bring it uglier? Can you bring it uglier?
It was a little hard with her.
That's high praise.
Yeah. but I mean, she also was, you know, she still hasn't broken as like as an actor. She's known as a model. So I think that helped a lot too because she was a fresh face to a lot of audiences. Yeah.
That's a good thing. That's why I say, like, I think in this day and age, I mean, I watch all kinds of movies, but I always say, like, I like when I see new talent, especially in front of the camera, and you're just like, wow, that's amazing. And it's like their first or second role, and you're like, wow, that's just, and they get lost, and you get lost into, like, as opposed to seeing Tom Cruise be Tom Cruise be Tom Cruise be Tom Cruise, because there's nothing you can do about it. But that new talent, that fresh face, it's like, wow. And then I like to say, oh, watch their careers go.
Right.
Where are they going to go with this?
Right.
What's going to happen? Are they going to fuck it up and screw it up? Or are they going to be smart about it and so on and so forth?
Are you working on anything new? Are you kind of basking in the glow of Tangerine? So?
No, I'm trying. It's been a while, even though it just seems like it's coming out now. It's been a while. So we're moving on to a film in the same wheelhouse in terms of like, you know, social realism. It takes place in Florida, in Orlando, and it's about children living down there. So...
That's amazing.
My business partner to Julie Land. Julie lives in Orlando. She's got a couple of kids. So you need some casting.
nice.
What part of Florida are you like focusing on, and what kind like what?
Route 192, right outside the Magic Kingdom.
What kind of kids?
I don't want to say too much about it because I don't want to jinx myself.
Orlando is weird. I'm sure you've been there.
One. Yeah. We've already started our new research process.
I've been there more than enough times, and it's really strange little town. And so she lives on the outside.
Oh, okay.
In a suburbs kind of a thing. It's just a weird little town.
I went there once, and it's a very crazy story involving one of the most interesting women that I've ever when I had a life before this where I was a nude art model throughout New York and Manhattan, and then I would moonlight down in Miami and places like that, and it brought me into contact with some very very interesting people. So I do have an interesting Orlando story.
Yes, I have
about a very very weird girl. But I will not retell it here.
Yeah,
but
I have many interesting Orlando stories. There's like I, weird. Like the
so you're from New York originally?
No, but I was there for 3 years. As in Greenpoint, Williamsburg, then Bed-Stuy, then downtown Manhattan, and there was I was all like working
downtown
as a model.
Where?
Down, on a little street called John that's like one alleyway long.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
It's off Broadway.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
So I lived there. I was an art model and a nude art model and it's very bizarre culture, subculture. And then West Palm Beach and then would do Johnston to Miami. But I always thought that Florida is like, I'm working on a graphic novel and it's all about like the founding of Florida. But like Florida has always been to me a really interesting place in terms of like the cultural convergence. Like first contact in a lot of ways, sort of. But then also it's this, you know, way station of like older Jewish population, the young sort of Cuban population, and then this like weird deep South Southern population, and it's like all kind
it's
of
all converging.
Converges, and it's
we're all stuck
and
on that
also
little
and also
leg.
Black culture because that was some of the first free colonies ever were in Florida.
Yep.
The Spanish when they were like when the English came in and settled. Oh, history lesson. When the English came in and started like first Spain claimed all of Florida, which included up into what's now Georgia and South Carolina and even North Carolina. When the English came in and started having more success in the settlements there, they started pushing back against the Florida panhandle. So when that conflict started happening, there was like a lot of slave raiding and things like that. And one of the things the Spanish did to combat the English kind of encroachment on their territory was they said, any black slave that runs away and gets to us is free. And so that was like one of their ways to try to just kind of pull at the labor force that was like supporting the English economy of,
so
like you also have that too, like, which is like this longstanding sort of free black population. Like this is like the epicenter for a lot of free black like colonies and stuff was in the panhandle of Florida. So it's,
Did not know that. Wow. Interesting.
Culture. There's a lot of stuff going on there.
Florida's like screwed up basically.
All nuts rolled down to Florida.
It's a big mess. When do you guys start shooting?
We have to shoot in July and August. I know it's going to be brutal. I know. But you know what? This is how I see it. I'm fine with brutal weather as long as I'm using it on film to shoot. I hate living in it. That's why I don't live in New York anymore. I'm done with New York.
Too many winters.
Well, it depends on where you are, because actually like St. Augustine and up a little bit into northern Florida, it's actually not too bad during the summer.
Orlando though is brutal. You'll get not only the humidity, the heat, the whole thing is just crazy.
But it'll make the faces look good. So, that's all that matters.
So do you want to tell people like where they can find you?
Sure.
Where they can
I'm out there. I'm on social media.
Put your address right now.
Yeah, sure.
Exactly. He's at.
My Twitter handle is at Lil Film, L-I-L, like an abbreviated little and then film. We also have at Tangerine Film. We're also all over Facebook. But anyway, the home entertainment editions. I don't even know how you these days. VOD streaming, all of that stuff.
Right.
But Tangerine is already on VOD.
Okay.
It just came out a couple of days ago.
Sweet.
And then tomorrow, which is I don't know when you're airing this, but November 10. What is? Where are we?
Today's the 7th
of what?
November.
November. Right. I feel you. I feel you.
No, but November 10th. We
No. Today's the 8th.
Okay.
Wow.
We have our Blu-ray DVD coming out tomorrow.
Awesome.
And we're Mark and Jay Duplass are like just pushing the whole Oscar campaign very hard for both Kiki and Maya and fingers crossed for them. And that's about it. Starlet is back up streaming on Netflix now. So get it while it's hot. And my other films are out there, they're floating around. And Greg the Bunny is always available.
Right.
It's like YouTube that. So
thank you so much for coming.
All right. Thank you for having me.
All right, guys. And you know where to find me on Twitter, at Sovereign Sire. On my website, ilovesov.com. You can watch my History Show, Boss Bitches of History, on the Wisecrack channel on YouTube. And you can download this very cute little podcast on iTunes, SoundCloud, ilovesov.com, and JulieLandRadio.com. See you guys next time.